As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You asked for it. Here it is. It's a podcast from Apathetic Enthusiasm.
On this episode of the show, we are going back to our childhood with Animaniacs and seeking the truth with Truth Seekers.
After these messages.
Ba-da-pup. Hey, everybody, I'm Travis.
Hey, everybody, I'm Brandon, and welcome to Apathetic Enthusiasm, your bi-weekly, fortnightly show talking about the things that we're up to in daily lives. That's right, Brandon and Travis, you're two lovable, wild, zany-brained hosts who live in a water tower on the Warner Brothers lot.
Yeah, we live on the Paramount.
Paramount lot.
Yeah, I'm doing great. Great start, guys. Welcome to the show.
I live on the TriStar Pictures lot.
MGM backlot. That's where I'm at. Now Hollywood Studios.
Yeah.
Walt Disney World.
Hey, so, everybody. Okay.
Hey. Let's talk about this for a second.
Okay.
We've got social media links and all that stuff. We'll get to in a minute. Brandon, you've lived in Florida for several years now.
Mm-hmm. You see the beach behind me?
You've lived about an hour and a half away from what my family would probably categorize as one of our top three, depending on who you ask, number one vacation destinations, and that is Walt Disney World Resorts. And you have gone there a sum total of how many times?
I've gone to Disney Springs twice.
Yeah.
Here, yeah. Well, I mean, you know why I've only been there twice to Disney Springs.
Coronavirus.
You're right. Our when we first got here to Florida, my son was 6. He wasn't very tall. He wasn't big enough.
He wasn't going to be a baller. Have a girl with a phone so he could call her.
wasn't tall enough for a lot of the rides. So what we did, because there are so many amusement parks out here, we were like, let's start with something small. Let's start with Legoland. And we started with Legoland. Legoland sucks. It's got some interesting stuff.
It's got its
charms.
Its charms. That's the perfect thing to say. Yes, it's got its charms.
When you go to Legoland, this is a quick aside into Legoland. When you go there, you're like, oh, they're gonna have so many cool Lego things to sell, like unique, special things that Legoland only will sell to folks. Well, like Legoland doesn't really belong to Lego, so it doesn't. That doesn't happen. Like, there's not you get better special kits from Disney Springs at the Lego store.
At the Lego store. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. But anyways, so Legoland. So we got season passes for that. We went a couple times and it was like, oh, okay. After the second time, you're like, I really didn't need to do this more than once. The next year we got passes to Universal. And so that's what we had this last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we went a bunch and we enjoyed
it. You took advantage of that. I can't fault you for that.
Yeah. And so this was the year, 2020 was the year that we were going to get season passes to go to Disney World and take advantage of that, do our last year and a half at Disney World. Well, coronavirus happened. Parks shut down for the most part. You could still go there, but you have to go.
I mean, like, they've been open for months, but you know,
you need an appointment and stuff like that. We know some folks who still have passes and they stop their passes. Our goal is to go there before we leave Florida at least once.
Thank you.
Because I will never come out here to Florida again if I can help it.
Fair. My family already wants to go back to Disney World, but yeah, I know Florida isn't the only place in the world for Disney theme parks, but and growing up as a Southern California Disney fan, Disneyland is home for me. But man, there are some outstanding parks in Florida.
Yeah, in a field.
And they're just
outstanding in a field,
and also outstanding in their field. All right, if you want to tell us about your favorite Florida theme park situations or anything else that you want to talk about, there are plenty of ways that you can get a hold of us. You can tweet at us. I'm at Jugglemino. He's at Barnyard Cruise. We collectively are at Appethusiast. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/apatheticenthusiasmshow. Send us an email, apatheticenthusiasmshow@gmail.com. or Instagram, apathetic_enthusiasm. All of our shows, everything that we make, can be found at apatheticenthusiasm.com. If you are watching live right now, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you.
We are.
You can watch Monday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern time on twitch.tv/apatheticenthusiasm or over on YouTube, youtube.com/apatheticenthusiasm. And then we have merch. You can get our Rick and Morty curated t-shirts as well as some interdimensional RSS shirts over at apatheticenthusiasm.com/shop, or go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/apatheticenthusiasm, where you can support the show, get bonus content, all sorts of fun stuff going on over there. If you are watching live or watching not live later at some time in the future, and you're wondering why our surroundings look a little bit different, that is because there was a professional football game that took place about 2 weeks ago when we were not recording in Apathetic Enthusiasm.
That's right.
I guess it was a week ago, just over a week. And Brandon and my favorite teams were playing each other. And so we had a gentleman's agreement, a wager, if you will, to put a little bit of incentive on the winner of that game. And so we decided last minute, like what, a couple hours before kickoff, that whoever's team won, we would reskin the layout for this episode.
Yeah.
Based on the colors of
it looks great.
Of our favorite team. Brandon's team definitely won.
Yeah,
there's no doubt really that your team is going to win.
I want to say, I'm looking at this overlay, Travis. I'm like looking around, right? Oh, whoa, whoa, oh, it looks fantastic. I gotta say that when you set up your new overlay for your puzzle pieces, your puzzle piece stream,
the quarantine stream, puzzle cast 2020,
your puzzle quarantine stream, that I was like, oh, you know what? He developed some skills. He boosted his skills to do that, to get his DSLR camera going. That, you know what? He's gonna make the best Dolphins overlay that I've ever seen.
Or whatever unofficial team that we're not going to get in trouble. We're not going to get in trouble. Nobody watches.
The Diami Dolphins.
Diami Dolphins.
it looks good. Congratulations. Congratulations to the Diami Dolphins for their win.
Yes. And Garage Dolphin always is a fan anyway. Oh, yeah. A huge throwback. don't worry, guys. This layout will be gone by by the next episode.
Or
I'll just turn it off. Maybe it'll always be there, but you just won't see it, right? It'll just be like, is it there? Is it not? I don't know. We'll see.
I didn't watch football. We didn't watch football yesterday. Well, I didn't anyway. So I guess the Dolphins lost to the Broncos. I guess that's what happened.
I think that's what Matt might be alluding to. Anyway. Yeah.
Whatever. Bordinko, my buddy, Tampa Bay, go Bucks. Yeah. Hey, I'm here now. I'm okay with them winning.
The Chargers played the Jets. So if they didn't win that game, I would rethink everything about my following of football. But fortunately, they managed to get like their third win or something. Ridiculous. It's a rebuilding year. Rookie quarterback. Yeah. Anyway, what we're here
to... I'm going to ban Matt from the chat. Just one sec.
Can we just moderate him right out of here real quick?
Yeah. I'm going to moderate any word of Broncos and Denver out of the chat, and also have a good day face. Okay.
That's all wise. We do have a couple of new shows. New, I think. Is Truth Seekers new? Yeah.
Truth Seekers is new. Yeah. Yeah. You want to talk about that?
You want to talk about Truth Seekers first? Let's talk about that first.
Yeah, let's talk about Truth Seekers first. So I'm a big Simon Pegg, Nick Frost fan. And I heard about this show that came out on Amazon Prime just about a week and a half, week and some change ago. I saw it and I wasn't super excited about it. I don't know why. Like anytime a new Nick Frost, Simon Pegg thing comes out, I'm like, I'm not immediately excited about it. But then I watch it and then I enjoy the heck out of it. This was another example of that. And Chelsea was actually like, hey, do you want to watch this Truth Seeker show? I'm like, and I hesitantly said, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I'll watch it. Watched the first episode. I wasn't super impressed at first, and then it got more into it. And then by the end of the weekend, we had finished watching it. It's only eight episodes, 30 minutes each. So it's a real quick watch. Stars Nick Frost, Simon Pegg is there as he's not one of the main stars of it, but he's a common cast member. Malcolm
still
McDowell.
Given significantly higher billing than some of the other people that are on the show regularly, but yeah.
It was created by Frost, Pegg, and Nat Saunders. So did you hear about the show before I brought it up to you?
Not enough to retain memory about it.
Okay.
I feel like I saw something about it. I was like, oh, cool, it's them. And then not until you're like, hey, Truth Seekers, you should check that out. It was like, oh, let me look this up. And I was like, oh, this is a thing with them.
right. And then you're like, Brandon says I should watch it. He watched the entire thing, and he doesn't watch shows through their entirety normally. So I'll give it a shot. Actually, I told you to watch it today.
and I was quarantined and teleworking and was like, well, yeah, I'll turn it on. It's not like I'm going anywhere. So, and you're like, hey, what are we talking about tonight? You should watch the Truth Seekers show. That is our format, guys. That is how this show happens.
That is behind the curtain. So Truth Seekers. Nick Frost plays Gus Roberts. He's the kind of main character. And Simon Pegg is the boss of the company that he works for. He's basically a Wi-Fi technician. Frontier, AT&T, DirecTV, whatever.
Their company's called Smile.
Smile. Broadband Specialist.
Yeah, exactly.
And it centers around him, his interest in the supernatural. He has a YouTube channel where he goes to haunted places in England as a truth seeker. He gets a new coworker played by Samson Kayo. Who plays a man named Elton John.
Right, yeah.
And his unwillingness to work with this guy at first, but then them discovering actual haunted places. Eventually, there's a young girl named Astrid who shows up, and then the mystery kind of unfolds from there. So, Travis, what did you think of this first episode?
The first episode I thought was a solid sort of pilot, if you will. It sets the tone for the show really well. Much like, you know, your Shaun of the Dead or, I don't know, what are some other examples of, what's the other one?
At World's End.
No.
Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz. That's the one I'm thinking of. Where they kind of blend like horror and comedy. It's not taking itself too seriously, but it's enough to where, and it's weird because it sits in like this gray area, right? Where it's not like super funny comedy, but it's also not like super scary horror. It's just kind of like, yeah, we're gonna do both of these. We're gonna take them both seriously. We're not gonna like half do it, but it just kind of is like makes this little blend where you're like, oh, this is funny, but also like I wasn't sitting there like busting up laughing all the time, but I also wasn't like, oh, I need to go change my sweatpants because this is so scary. So it was good. The effects were really good, but immediately from watching the first episode, I felt like the quality of the show was similar to like a Hot Fuzz or, you know, that sort of thing. It's just sort of its feel. And obviously having Nick Frost and Simon Pegg are gonna add to that. So
yeah. Well, so, you know, Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, At World's End, those were directed by Edgar Wright, who took a big part in those stories as well. And so like some of the direction in Truth Seekers, it doesn't have that kind of kinetic energy that Edgar Wright brings in his directing. But it still has some of the writing and the humor behind it. But you're right, it's not laugh out loud funny in that way.
It's more British humor more too, subdued. Right? So it's not always laugh out loud funny.
Yeah. Nick Frost character, when he's first introduced in the first half of that first episode, he feels kind of like the one SNL character, the IT guy, like the move, you know.
Like, is it like Nick Burns, your office's computer guy, or something like that?
Like kind of felt that, and it felt a little at first, you know, a bit cliched on it. But as the episode went on and he started opening up with some of that, the mystery, there's like a there's a signal that's broadcast that just repeats numbers, the same number over and over again. And when the partner, Elton John, comes in, then all of a sudden that number doesn't repeat the same way anymore. And it starts showing a sequence of number over this one broadcast on the radio, like kickstarting, like, okay, well, what's there's actual supernatural stuff going on. And that's when I'm like, okay, yeah, I want to check out the rest of it. Well,
that was one of my favorite things about the premise of the show, is the idea of Nick Frost's character being a YouTube paranormal ghost hunter type guy who notoriously, like, those guys seem to like make a big deal out of stuff that may or may not actually be haunted. But then marrying that with at least the audience's perspective of knowing that there are actual paranormal things happening, and how he is able to actually interact with those. And then like early on, there's times when he's like, oh, this is haunted because of this or whatever. And it's like, definitely not the case. That's not what's happening. But like, you can kind of see as things are unfolding. The other thing I really like about this, and I sort of, it comes up more and more as the show goes on, but in the first couple episodes, this sort of blending of technology with the paranormal, like there, you have instances of, you know, like nanobots and people getting like absorbed into old timey radios and all kinds of stuff like that. And how that's used to kind of express stuff that's happening with, you know, the, these ghosts or different things like that.
Yeah.
And with that, a lot of the images of some of the ghosts, the way that they're shown on screen, have sort of like a glitchy, almost like busted like computer type of look, where they don't just look like a like blurry. They have like almost like jagged lines going through them that look like a glitch from like a computer or something. And just for that style, I thought it was a cool decision.
Yeah. As the season goes on, that combination of the supernatural and technology continues. That thematic tech blend continues to occur. And I agree with you. Like that piece of it really stood out to me. Really, really interesting. Especially like it, the numbers, when the numbers started repeating. Chelsea's like, are we watching Lost? Is this why you actually like the show?
Me and my kid are up to season two.
Yeah. Bordinko in the chat mentioning, sounds like dem ghosts need DevOps.
don't I know it. Can we get some iteration planning meetings and a retrospective? Am I right? Can we have a ghost retrospective?
Can we do this? Can we do, look, where's the ghost product owner to, you know, set up the backlog?
This is a dumb conversation. We need to move on.
Anyway, so I'll you got what, 3 episodes into it before you?
I've watched 4. Oh. So I'm about halfway through.
Okay.
Just got through the episode where they attend the con or whatever. Comic convention.
Con Cove Con Con.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I will say, that's the other part about this show that I will credit it. It's not just riding on the idea of, you know, jump scares or having scary stuff happen. Like the character development and like getting to know about some of these characters. There's a lot of stuff in it that is endearing and makes you care about the characters a little bit more. So I'm interested in watching the last 4 episodes. Certain shows we watch just to talk about on the podcast, and then I never revisit them again. looking at you, B-Stars. Sorry. but I will probably finish Truth Seekers and see what ends up happening, at least by the end of this first season.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I look forward to a season 2. When the season ended, we're like, oh, my kid was like, oh, some notable guest stars, Kelly McDonald, who, she met at in Brave. She did the voice of,
oh, okay.
She's also the wife in There Will Be, not literally, but No Country for Old Men. What kind of weird stretch.
I haven't seen that movie in like since it was in Oscar contention, so yeah, I don't remember a lot about it.
And if you're a fan of the ye old the Mighty Boosh, Julian Barrett is in the latter half of the season as Dr. Peter Toynbee. And I pointed him out, and I've only seen like 2 episodes of The Mighty Boosh, one of them being with old Greg.
This is as close to Bailey's as you can get without getting your eyes wet.
And I pointed him out to Chelsea. She's like, oh yeah, you're right. She wants to start watch Mighty Boosh with me, and I'm inclined to watch it with her. So anyway, overall, I really like the show, and I think I recommend it to folks who like Nick Frost and Simon Pegg and the supernatural, because yeah, it's not super scary, but yeah, it's got a good story to it. And
it's good.
Yeah, Malcolm McDowell played like the relationship between him and Nick Frost. He plays Gus Rob. He plays Nick Frost's dad, which you find out more about later. So, anyways, recommend. Travis, recommend?
Yeah, I'll recommend it.
Sweet. All right. That is our stamp of approval.
Cool. We got audio drops now. This show is taking off.
If it gets our stamp of approval, we're going to change it to this guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And if it doesn't get approval, the crickets. Those are the only drops I have programmed in.
Okay. All right. Well, now that we've taken care of all of those, let's get into our second featured topic for the evening. This is another show that is available for streaming, this time over on Hulu. We are, of course, talking about the reboot of a cartoon from my childhood, the Animaniacs, now back on Hulu. Brandon, first off, I want you to just talk for a minute about your experience with Animaniacs, the OG Animaniacs. Were you a fan? Did you watch it? Did you love it? Did you hate it? Were you too cool for that old school?
Did I love it? Did I watch it? Oh, look at all this Animaniacs merch I have in the back. Just kidding. I don't actually have any. I saw the pops a couple months back, and I had bought so many damn Rick and Morty ones that I'm like, I can't justify buying any anymore. But if I see the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror pops, I'm on it. But I lie. I didn't buy the one that I saw that I really whatever.
Anyway, moving on.
Animaniacs. When. In that heyday of Warner Brothers animation, you'd come home from school afternoon. What's on the TV? You could KCAL 9 was what I had in Los Angeles. And that's where you would have all the Disney stuff, the Disney block animation. So you'd have Darkwing Duck, which I love the hell out of. But then like later in the 90s, they started moving away into like, was that one Marsupilami, and then there's one like weird animated thing that had was like a cop or something like that.
Are you talking about Rescue Rangers, Chip and Dale?
No, I'm not talking about Rescue Rangers. No, I watched Rescue Rangers. No, and Tailspin, Bonkers or something like that. I don't.
Oh, remember. Bonkers. Yeah. I never watched that show. I never watched it.
Exactly. So I was starting to move. away from those shows, moving over to the WB Tiny Toon Adventures, and Batman the Animated Series drew me heavily to that channel. By the way, Gargoyles was over on Disney, and I didn't really get into that as well.
Yeah, Gargoyles apparently is like loved by its fans, and a lot of people think it's very underrepresented. I think you can watch it on Disney Plus. I have not gone back to visit that and give it its due, but
have not. Maybe we should. But I'm not doing it today. I'm still segueing into talking about
into Animaniacs.
Tiny Toon Adventures, Batman Animated Series, Bordinko mentioning Freakazoid, of course. Freakazoid was my thing. Paul Rugg does voice for Freakazoid, but then Animaniacs, like it was in the transition of my life where that was the humor that referential humor was really really sticking to me, and so I love the hell out of Animaniacs. I watched the hell out of it along with Batman animated series. What about you? Like, was that something that did you focus on Animaniacs a lot, or were you still, you know, watching Rugrats on Nickelodeon?
No, I watched a lot of Animaniacs. My family went through phases where like we did have cable, we didn't. Like it wasn't a constant in my house. So like blocks of animation on the WB I mean, that's a staple for me, right? So, yeah, I definitely liked Animaniacs. I loved the humor of it. The just sort of like, I don't know, meta comedy for it. It was really appealing to me. And to this day, I will think back to the Animaniacs, think back to certain clips, certain, you know, the countries of the world, the, you know, the states and their capitals, like those yeah. songs, like I use to teach my kids like stuff about the world. Like, so, yeah, it's just certain aspects of the Animaniacs have just always held a special place in my heart. And it was kind of in those years where I was like starting to get to be at a point where I was maybe a little too old to be watching cartoons, but you know, like I was still like, no, this is great. And I don't think that there was ever a point in my life where I was going to outgrow animation and cartoons. So, points at Rick and Morty podcast. so yeah, I think I always enjoyed it. And so when I heard that they were going to reboot the show on Hulu, I was excited. My kids were excited because they'd already started watching a little bit of the original series. And yeah, so everybody's excited for it to come out on Hulu. And I watched four episodes so far. And I think there's like a whole block of, I think 10 episodes that all got released, maybe 13 actually, in this first season. So
I know there's more than eight. There's more than Truth Seekers episodes.
There's more than Truth Seekers. Nick Frost, get your act together.
Yeah. Come on. I saw the announcement a month or so ago, with the Jurassic Park kind of gag. And then the animated Spielberg saying, oh, it's coming back. You know, his name is executive producer. It's still on it. By the way, not voiced by Spielberg. They got a voice actor to do Spielberg. Like, come on, Spielberg. You know, the last thing I watched of yours was BFG, and it's still not a great movie.
What's the last movie Spielberg made?
What was it? The Ready Player One? Was that the... Maybe he made something after that. Yeah.
We're going to find out. I just pulled up his filmography.
Okay. I will give you an extra second.
Ready Player One was the last one. Very good. Do you care to guess what his next project is releasing in 2021, potentially?
Animaniacs.
Originally supposed to be released December 18th, 2020.
I do not know offhand. What is it?
West Side Story.
Huh. Well, so Animaniacs, the thing about it is...
It's co-produced anyway. Co-produced by...
Jeez.
But he has director credit on there, apparently. So anyway, Animaniacs.
So yeah, I saw that Jurassic Park intro, you know, a couple weeks back, whatever. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'll check it out. Not super excited about it, but interested enough that I would watch a couple episodes. And so this weekend it released, watched a couple episodes. I think we just watched the fourth or fifth episode of the season. Mm-hmm. And the thing that jumps out at me is they maintain a zaniness, whereas Yakko, Wakko, and Dot are zany, and they're referential, and they're meta. They're doing all that stuff. The only other segments that are there, and remember, you know, in the 90s, you had like the Good Feathers, you had Mindy and the dog
buttons,
yeah, Mindy Buttons. You had Good mm-hmm. Idea, Bad Idea,
a classic sketch.
Did
you notice? And I think the third or fourth episode. The mime from Good Idea, Bad Idea making an appearance.
Oh, I didn't notice.
Yeah, he's drawn in the background of one of those. I was like, hey, it's him.
Yeah. Bordinko mentions the Dr. Scratch and Sniff. Scratch and Sniff. He hasn't made an appearance yet.
Although Rob Paulsen is credited as the voice of Yakko, Pinky, and Dr. Scratch and Sniff for the 2020 version of the show. So I don't know if he's going to make an appearance or not.
Maybe. I mean, we haven't finished the season yet, so very, very well could appear. Yeah. But yeah, there aren't those other segments of the show. It's just Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain. Pinky and the Brain feels as it doesn't feel like it skipped a beat at all with those segments so far in the show. You know, again, five episodes in, it feels like it is just as in place now as it was in the 90s. Like it's good. I really enjoyed Pinky and the Brain, and I was one of the folks who when Pinky and the Brain became its own show, I was like, okay, nope.
Yeah, I watched a few episodes as a kid, and then I was like, all right, I don't know if I can do a full 22 minutes of Pinky and the Brain. Like,
yeah,
I will say
it's like when Metalocalypse went to 30 minutes. So yeah, you don't know that.
I will say the Pinky and the Brain sketches for this reboot haven't been my favorite. There's been some good stuff in there. I thought it was interesting that the way that they brought them like from the 90s to now was that Pinky or the Brain was spending that whole time inventing the internet and creating this internet where everybody's on their phones becoming these zombies. I thought that was a nice touch. But after, you know, that first episode, it kind of just rolls into that same episodic, what are we going to do tonight, Pinky? Or, you know, try to take over the world, everything, right? So
that episode of him creating the internet and the Seth Meyers, that got the biggest laugh out of me with
the Seth Meyers part.
Because Seth Meyers with he's got a big smile, and then at some point in time it's already an exaggerated huge smile, and then he smiles more very, very slowly, and I don't remember what happened the next 30 seconds of that episode because I was still laughing so hard.
Yeah. I find it interesting because they set up the premise from the theme song, right? The theme song has been rewritten. It has been modernized. Obviously, they had to rewrite it a little bit to take out the fact that all of those, you know, good feathers and stuff aren't going to be in it. So they had to rewrite those parts. But they've modernized it a little bit. They're now gender neutral, something, you know, ethically, no ethical biases. Yeah. I forget the other non-binary, I think is what they say.
Yeah. Chelsea, when the second episode, we listened to the theme song, she's like, wait, wasn't it Dot is Cute and Yakko Yaks or Wacko?
It was. It was.
Yeah.
And now it's Dot has Wit and Yakko Yak.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The other big thing about the theme song that it sticks out to me, I don't know if you've noticed that, the theme song used to say, it's time for Animaniacs. But now, listen to it, and you won't be able to unhear it. Now they say, it's time for Animaniacs. Listen.
Annie. Get out.
You won't unhear it.
Yeah. I probably won't.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Bill Clinton's no not Bill playing Clinton. Although there is some saxophone playing, I think, in the first episode.
Yeah.
But it is very interesting to me, and I think this is a part of the core discussion for this show, is you are creating an animated program that should appeal to kids in 2020. Obviously, you want to mimic the format that got you where you were with in the success of the 90s, but you also have to realize that your original audience that watched you in the 90s is now in their 30s, potentially in their 40s, So who are you making the show for? Do you strictly appeal to the kids, or do you create a show that also has appeal for an older audience? They have clearly tried to hit the entire demographic with the political commentary, I will say, that is at least very present in the first four episodes, and I would assume carries on even further. How do you feel about that? Like, I know now, again, I'm in quarantine from my family right now, so I'm not watching the show with my family, so I can't really like say like when I laugh at a joke about that's making like a political statement, I can't like look over at my kids and be like, eh?
you get it? You get it?
But, like, I know my family was watching it and I was FaceTiming with them, and and my wife was like laughing at a bunch of different things. She's like, oh gosh, like, yeah. I can't believe some of the stuff they're talking about.
Well, as I answer this, I want to reach out to Bordinka, because my buddy Brian, he sent us a tweet before the show started. He's watching it with his boys, the first four episodes, and says it's biting satire. So I want to ask him, since he's out there, like, you know, do your kids are your kids tracking it? He points out the bunny episode here in chat. Yep. That is the last episode I watched. So what I will say is, Chelsea and I didn't get the metaphor at first. They said bun. They kept saying buns. I was like, is this going to turn into a sexual thing? The entire time. And then eventually I was like, oh, bun control. Okay, duh.
A bun buyback program in Australia.
Right.
But so there's a point when it gets very hard to miss.
Yeah, it's
in
not
in terms of the satire.
Dot says, you know, veiled metaphor. I'm like, there's nothing veiled about that. But yeah. But at the end of the episode, talking to the kid, the 8-year old, he's like, what is she talking about? You know, veiled metaphor. Like, oh, okay. He didn't get that part of it. Mm-hmm. He didn't understand the nuance of gun control and an Australian gun buyback program. So I think that is, you know, for a certain threshold of age, I think you could still get away with that. And then when you maybe 12, I don't know, there comes a time where like, oh yeah, I see what they're doing. Even though I'm a young kid, I know that they're trying to say something politically. Okay, yeah, Bordega says they didn't even pick up on Trump as the monster.
The Cyclops in the Odyssey bit, the demigod demagogue mix up, which I thought was like, that was the first thing that I saw where I was just like, oh my gosh, like they're really not pulling punches with this show. Like, yeah, my kids probably would not pick up on that. They might have been like, he looks kind of like Trump at their age, but nobody else in my house like knows what demagogue means. Just based on what Dot says, right?
We had Alexa define demagogue for the family, for Chelsea and the kid, because I was like, I'm trying to, but you know, let's just let the smart
let's let Webster spell it out for you. But
I don't remember in the early seasons anyway of Animaniacs leaning that heavily into the political kind of commentary. Commentary. What I remember most of it is
more... I mean, it had Bill Clinton playing a saxophone in the intro, so yeah. I mean, obviously there was stuff there.
The episode where they are ancient gods and when they're going up against the Arnold Schwarzenegger impression at the Olympics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the episodes that I recall, like the making fun of actors in Hollywood and that kind of references, more so than it was let's make fun of the one-eyed president.
Bordinko saying in the chat, there is a lot of commentary there if you rewatch it, which honestly, watching these episodes makes you want to go back and rewatch some of it and be like, what went over my head as a kid that I might pick up on now? Because now that I'm, you know, a generation older and on the other side of that coin, it's really interesting to like, what did all the adults think of that show back in the 90s?
I watched an episode that was about Ernest Hemingway, and like what a figure to have a kid's show about, right? Old man in the sea and how he ended his own life, right? And you know, it's just like so clearly there's a lot of that stuff that we missed. And I think having it be so focused, so available now in 2020, and available for folks to watch, compact and binge worthy in basically one day, I think that makes it feel a little bit more in your face than maybe it was when you were a kid, right? And it was on the WB in the afternoon when parents were at work. And it's not after school when you're a kid and you're coming in.
And you're not streaming it as a family, right? Or whatever. Like, it's, the kid watches his cartoons when he gets home from school while he's doing his long division. And then, you know, we all have tacos or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. like...
Typical taco, anime classic taco day,
classic taco day. I think I'm gonna keep watching. I'm not gonna like binge watch it, but I'll probably check out some more of these episodes, see how long that thinly veiled satire persists, and see what else comes out of it. What do you think about the art style? Do you feel like it is in line with the 90s? Do you think that they are trying too hard to match the 90s, or do you think they're kind of taking it in its own direction?
I don't really notice any major difference. Like it's obviously it's the animation style has shifted since the mid 90s and computers are what we use for animation now. But to me, other than the Jurassic Park intro, everything feels like it's seamless enough. Like it's modernized in the same way that like The Simpsons eventually modernized. It's sure. Different animation, but it feels like the old animation still to me.
The use of like caricature in terms of like the way they're drawing a lot of like human characters, for a lot of characters, I feel like it works. For some, I feel like it goes almost a bit too far.
Oh,
where it makes it like almost hard to look at some of the characters where in some of the models, but
Chelsea observed that there's a lot of nipples. There's lots of nipples going on.
There is. I don't know if there's been an episode without nipples. if I'm being honest,
that's the remakes. Really claim to fame is nipple.
Good old 2020, the nipple season of Animaniacs.
the other thing that Chelsea pointed out that she's having trouble getting past is that they leaned heavily into it in the first episode, which makes sense because they're explaining that it's a reboot and they're coming back and then talking about money and selling out and pointing out that they're selling out. It's kind of like when I meet new people and I talk shit about myself for the first week and a half just so they don't get any idea that I think I'm better than I am.
Yeah. And then you prove it.
And then, and then I just laid on them just one of the days. But that's kind of how she feels about the Animaniacs, in the sense that like they're pointing out that they're selling out over and over again, so that they're like, see, look, we're hip because we're getting paid a lot of money for this. I don't necessarily mind it, but how do you feel about that?
I'm fine with it. I feel like some of the better jokes in the first episodes were about them selling out and getting their giant check from Hulu, or the giant Hulu logo spelled out in money behind them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Those cracked me up. I liked them. So
it's always been a part of the theme song, right? Like even in the original one, we have pay or play contracts, right? That's always been a gag about it, right?
Mm-hmm. So I'm fine with it. The only thing I would say is if anything becomes too repetitive or they go back to that well too many times, then I'm gonna be like, all right, like, we get it. Hulu paid you a grip of cash. I pay Hulu a grip of cash every month for my live TV account, which they are now increasing by $10 because they have to pay the Animaniacs so much. So, you know what? Maybe, you know, rub it in my face, Yakko, every time you come out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So maybe stop rubbing it in my effing face. I think that this show. It's funny. It's made me laugh more than once. The voices, for the most part, Brain, Maurice LaMarche, and Pinky are still pretty good. I'll say sometimes their rehashed voices of Yakko, Wakko, and Dot are sometimes slip into a version that isn't what they used to sound like.
I'd agree, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially Wakko, Jess Harnell, but still, like, it captures their essence. Still, they're zany, they're wild, they pull through the turns, their prowess is potent and secretly stern. It's cake. They speed
through the finish. The flags go down.
I dig the show. Ultimately, I think if you are not a conservative, then you'll enjoy.
Yeah, that is something that I was interested in, is does the show alienate a conservative base? You know, like, I don't, frankly, all right, if you feel certain ways politically and the Animaniacs bother you, well, all right, then you're probably not a fan of this show either. I was curious to see, like, how does that play out? And I don't know, maybe a bunch of, you know, young Republicans grew up loving Animaniacs and now they're like, hey, it's back. They're like, oh gosh, what do I feel about things? It's really funny how your memory of something is, like, loose.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it's not until someone brings something right up to the forefront and shows it to you that you realize, oh wow, that is different. I was scrolling on the Animaniacs 2020 Wikipedia page, and there's an image on here of the original Animaniacs models of the Warner Brothers and the Warner sister Dot.
Yeah.
And it's placed directly beside the new animation, the new characters. And there are stark differences. I mean, obviously, like, Yakko has pants on, Dot has a pink skirt and a flower in her hair, but, like, just the shape of the way that they're drawn a little bit, like, some of the details and everything, it is like they're different looking. But because, like, the red hat and the blue shirt are there on Wakko, like, all the rest of the details just kind of are fine. Like,
yeah, it's like Mario in the original game versus Super Mario Galaxy, where he's a bee. Like, you know that it's Mario because of the hat, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's recognizable
because of the hat. Anyway, if you are a fan of the original Animaniacs, I recommend checking it out on Hulu. if you have really conservative political views, you're be warned. Otherwise, but I think the show's pretty good. I think kids are gonna like it. And it really reignites that 90s golden era of TV animation now for a new streaming audience. So
which is why it's good stuff. Which is why I'm excited to announce the reboot of Tiny Toon Adventures, Buster Rabbit, Buster and Babs Rabbit, Hampton, Plucky Duck.
Could you imagine if they used this podcast, of all things, to announce the reboot of Tiny Toon Adventures?
They paid us so much money for it. And
just the worst market research ever.
Got no return on investment in any way, shape, or form.
Well,
laughing our way to the bank.
Exactly. All right. Well, that is our show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you for watching. If you're watching live, please don't go anywhere. We will stick around for a podcast post show, streaming exclusive, where we'll hang out, maybe talk a little bit about our almost 6 hour long D&D adventure this last weekend. I have some thoughts on that that I'd like to discuss. So if you want to catch that or any of our video versions of the podcast, make sure you head over to youtube.com/apatheticenthusiasm, where you can catch pretty much anything we stream. We usually don't delete anything off of there. Or catch us on Twitch, twitch.tv/apatheticenthusiasm. If you're listening, thank you guys for joining us. Make sure to rate, review this podcast if you have not done that yet. We love you. You're wonderful. And until next time, I'm Travis.
And I am Brandon. And we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.